Who's buried in Midian?
Ain't nothing but dead folk.
Somewhere, hidden from sight, closer than you might think, is a place that's not on any map. Midian.
Something's breeding there.
It looks a lot like hell, but they call it home.
There goes the neighborhood.
They're not pretty. They're not neighborly.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
They're not even human. But this time, they're the good guys. From the imagination of Clive Barker comes Nightbreed.
You can't go down there!
They have only one enemy. A beast called man, sworn to destroy the Nightbreed.
Sounds like we're going head to head with the devil himself.
And only one chance. A man.
Boone!
Called Boone.
It's time to fight! Go get him, boys!
I'll kill you all!
What chance have we got?
They're armed.
So am I.
Out of your deepest fears and your darkest fantasies, Clive Barker brings you a startling new breed of adventure.
I won't let you down.
Nightbreed. At last, the night has a hero.
Outstanding.
Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. I'm your host, Colin. I'm surrounded by internet radio superstars, including
Brent.
This is Tom.
Oh, Tazbear. It's Travis.
And Gary.
And tonight, we're going to have a conversation around the bar about Clive Barker's Nightbreed. I picked this movie for tonight. We're watching the director's cut of this movie, which was originally made in 1990, but it was released theatrically in a version, apparently, that Clive Barker was never happy with, and because the studio forced him to cut quite a bit out of it. And so, after like this detective hunt through the United States, they found this footage that was supposedly lost for years.
Like they said,
and reassembled this movie
in the beginning in interview. They said like all it took was internet like fan like it's like these studios, they've got the fucking footage hidden away, and the filmmakers are like, where is it? And they're like, I don't know.
It's occupied media stuff. Yeah,
but as soon as like what, like we can make money off of editing. We found it! Yeah. We found archive footage! Dude, this has happened to, like, what? At least four or five movies by now. Like, really, like, crazy movies that are totally different with all this footage.
Well, that's partly why I picked this movie, was because I think this is, like, historically significant for that, you know, reason that we're talking 25 years. Like, so the movie was never actually made the way it was supposed to be made for like 25 years.
Yeah, that's
right. So we're now looking at what was supposed to be, you know, released in 1990.
And it's like, did Star Wars start this idea of realize, like, I want to go back and finish the film how I realized that this had to have been those special edition episode four, five, and six.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess for me, what was the original movie like?
The theatrical cut?
Yeah, I mean, what was the theatrical cut like? Because, like, I have never seen the theatrical. Well, the biggest change,
yeah, that's right, because Brent and Tom are new to Nightbreed tonight. Travis,
I did not like the original Nightbreed, which I saw in VHS tape in the mid-90s, I'm sure, which it just never... Right. Never click with me. Obviously, whatever editing decisions.
Well, Travis, Gary, and myself have seen the movie before when it was originally released. Now, I mean, it's been years since I've seen it, so I don't know if Gary...
Weeks.
You saw it weeks ago? So you're more familiar with what's different. So if I'm right, you help me where I'm wrong, most of the new footage comes in the beginning and the end of the movie.
Right.
Like, those are the two parts that are significantly different.
I think they just... The parts they put in it seem like were more to establish the relationship between Laurie and Boone and Boone and Decker. Because before, it went right from the part where she says, no bad dreams, to then...
Well, didn't
then,
it start
no, then it goes to the family being killed. Yeah. Then it goes to Decker's office.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought it started with Decker killing the family. That's the only thing I remember.
Well, I want to say part of that is those scenes with Decker, which are now still in the movie, were shot
played by David Cronenberg, I think, horribly.
Well, he's just got like a very odd
like delivery. Quaalude.
You're, like, you're not sure if he's like actually acting, or he's just like very relaxed. Like he, all the
he's
time.
On Quaaludes or something. Yeah.
He's still, hello, even if you see me.
Well, I'm going to be speaking.
And I know I'm going like to get Decker. Laughed out of the freak show for this, but on Jason X, he's that. It's that same monotone voice when he's there to pick up Jason.
Yeah,
and I don't like, even comprehend him being in Jason X. I don't even
he's
remember.
He's the psychiatrist in the beginning.
At the very beginning, it gets
and then
this
he gets
movie's
a shiv
going to drag on for about an additional 4 minutes because of how I deliver dialogue.
Yeah, which I think that plays to the strengths of that character in this movie because it makes him creepy.
Yes.
There's something off about the man himself. Playing the character.
That's true.
Cronenberg is famously also a filmmaker.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just don't
video
like
drone.
The, when he has the button mask on, I wish he wouldn't speak with it because that first scene is so powerful when he's killing the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just walking around. You're like, man, this is the scariest dude in this entire movie. But then as the film goes on, you're like, no, this is one of the more annoying characters in the film.
Right. Yeah, what's the point of the mask?
Well,
I thought there was going to be some moment in the movie
theme,
where it's like,
it? But that's part of the theme in the movie that
people
everybody
wear
wears
different
faces. Yeah.
Well, it happens to be when I decided to start a you know monster mask collection. That was the first one I had to have because I love
cool
that mask.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So that was the first one I bought
when I was a kid. I mean, that's why I was so disappointed when I first saw Nightbreed as a kid because that fucking mask. I seen Decker so many times in Fangoria, and I'm like, this looks fucking freaky.
Well, that was part of the. I want to say again that the murder scenes with Decker. Like at the beginning, those were reshoots that the studio insisted because they said, take more of this monster stuff out and let's make this more of a slasher movie, which was more in vogue in the 1990s. So they had him. So Clive Barker shot it under the direction of the studio. Like I think he scripted it and shot it, but tried to realign the focus of the movie. So it was more Boone and Decker, you know, the psychopath and the.
Yeah.
The savior of me.
Which they have like a weird unexplained history because the movie just starts with him having a bad dream about Midian and then Decker's just like, or he just said the character of Boone played by Craig Schaefer.
From One Tree Hill?
From
Anyone?
Fucking Some Kind of Wonderful. He was the bad guy. He was the bad guy to Eric Stoltz in Some Kind of Wonderful.
He was in the college football movie, The Program, too.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
He was
in one of the last Hellraiser movies.
Well, and the
was
other,
it Hellseeker? No, Inferno?
Inferno.
There where he was the cop?
Was the cop, yeah.
And his hair right has been in many movies.
Dun, dun, it's the 90s.
So okay,
he just didn't have the mullet in the back.
He had the pompadour.
Okay, so he has the dream about Midian, sees the monsters running towards Midian, obviously escaping mankind or whatever the hell, right? And he just, when he wakes up and Lori, that's his girlfriend, right?
Lori, yes.
And Bobby.
And Baba.
From Cop Rock. Anybody?
Where?
Anybody?
Huh?
What? Cop Rock?
She was in Born on 4th of July. Oh, she was his sister.
Cop Rock was like this thing around the time of NYPD Blue. That's a guy, Stephen Basho, the guy who does all the, did this like musical cop show on TV. It lasted a couple of
episodes. No way. I don't believe it.
She's also a character voice on Bioshock, too.
Crazy.
Oh, shit. She's Tenenbaum.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go, Tom. Boom. Video game tie-in.
Blow mine.
Oh, wow.
Is it Tenenbaum? What's the...
Oh.
Yeah,
Tenenbaum. Okay, so that's he wakes up from a dream of Midian, right? And he just says, Decker's still trying to call me. You know, right. She's like, what does he want? So they have a past history that's like really unexplained. They don't ever go back and explain. So what, he was in a juvenile delinquent or some shit?
Well, see, that was one thing with the new cut. In the beginning, in the first movie, they didn't explain why. He went in and he goes, are we in therapy again? That's all he ever said. But in this one, it says, you know, 4 months, you know, I'd spend 4 months when he's on the phone, when he comes downstairs. So it kind of explains that a little better.
And then you automatically get the idea that it's like, you automatically know Boone has mentioned Midian to this Decker guy.
Yeah.
Decker is a fucking eugenicist because in this movie He talks about how he weeds out the bad bloodlines, the negative bloodlines. That's did like, do I mean, it that's in this what one? He, yeah, or eugenicists, yeah.
Because I didn't hear it in this version.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he talks about it when he has the guy in the, whatever, convenience store or whatever. He says, like, yeah. I'm here to purify the world.
Filth breeding. Yeah.
So yeah, that's like his main motivation.
So that's why he wants to get to Midian, supposedly, to kill all the monsters.
Because they're filth.
They're filth, yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, this is almost looking at like a Dr. Van Helsing type of character, right? I mean, this is how I take Decker, right? It's just a different aspect of looking at the Van Helsing, to a doctor character that's obsessed with, why would a doctor want to kill monsters? Oh, because he's a fucking eugenicist. He wants to weed out the what he deems to be bad. Yeah. You know, Frankenstein's no fucking good. You know, and Dracula's no good.
And they're all German.
Yeah. Of course they're all German.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, so Boone has some kind of psychological problems in his past that are apparently...
That Decker helped him with something.
But Decker has used, like... or he's either manipulated Boone in some way, we're not entirely sure, into, on all these session tapes, Boone recounts these murders that have happened. And so Deckard's trying to frame Boone.
And what are Deckard's the murders? They're just the murder. Dreams he's had?
Yeah, well, I think so.
What it is, and I didn't hear it in this one, but they do talk about him being under hypnosis in the original cut. So he hypnotized him, and I think he just plants Decker. Those memories. Decker
did
puts the murders into
here?
His head.
Did
no,
they say
anything
that?
About talk hypnosis. About hypnosis.
But he says while you were in the sessions, you know, yeah. It's like you talked about.
That would make sense if I told you under hypnosis that, like, hey, you're gonna kill people like this, and you say I'm gonna kill people like this, and then you go out and kill people like that. They're like, oh, but they don't even say why he's doing it. You know what I mean, Decker?
Why he's fucking?
Why
with
he's
Boone,
the,
or why
yeah? Because like, okay, regardless of the Midian,
well, he just needed a fall.
Well, hold on, but. Really?
Yeah. He knew at some point that he, when the cops come to him, he's like, oh, I got a guy that I've been working on for months.
Yeah, I've tried to help him since he was a juvenile delinquent. And,
But
he says,
violent.
Decker says he's weeding out the filth, but what was wrong with that family he killed?
Because they're fat people. They're not body image perfect.
I guess that does make sense. I mean, they didn't say it in the movie.
But that's what
it is. But that's what it is. I want to mention that the father was the guy that was... He
left
would you
on
say
the
foreman
floor of aliens.
Aliens, and also the captain of the Red Dwarf mining Jupiter mining vessel. Yeah, that guy's a sci-fi. Like that guy's been cut out of every great sci-fi movie.
But he was left in the theatrical cut.
Wait, is the
Nightbreed.
Jupiter mining vessel that is that?
Is he actually faced in Nightbreed? His face is on the screen at Nightbreed.
Because
we watched the director's cut. I can't remember.
The theatrical, that scene was there.
Is that Event Horizon?
No, that's Red Dwarf. It's a English BBC, like Star Trek-y type of sitcom. He was the captain.
Wow.
Like, I mean, even though there's like 8 seasons, he's been in like at least a few episodes almost every season, kind of portraying this captain guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just happy to see that
guy. The guy that played Joyce also did the voice of the computer in one episode of Red Dwarf.
Who?
The guy that played Joyce, the detective.
Captain Panaka?
Yeah. Yeah.
Panaka?
Yeah,
Panaka. That man. That.
Yeah. Who?
His name is Hugh Kurashi. Detective Joyce, the black detective.
The fact that Captain Panaka was in this movie
for one episode. He was also here's one you guys might also know.
I see Captain Panaka.
He was Sunda Castigare, the guy that met with Highlander.
In the Highlander, yeah. He's the one who meets him in New York.
And he's in the African
That's right.
Dashiki or whatever.
Boom boom.
He was in that as well.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Well.
But his best performance is you can't take a Royal Highness there. Hoots Gangsters.
Is that the same guy?
From Attack of the... Or whatever. The
Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Attack of the Phantom Menace.
So, all right. So Boone goes to Midian, which turns out to
be
this...
Somehow, he's just like,
he's
in a hospital.
Narcisse, this guy who is also called to Midian.
Just calling the Midian out of window.
Midian is where the monsters
go,
apparently. This is the mythology that the movie sets up. That there is a place that Boone is dreaming about that is an actual reality. It's an under a graveyard somewhere in the wilds of Canada.
It's a city.
There's a city where the monsters live.
And it seems like it's 2 hours away from where everybody drives. Where's Midian?
It's close to Sheerness.
I've never heard of where all these
everybody
monsters live.
Everybody knows where Midian is.
Everybody knows. It's I'm amazed that they don't the monsters
out know where Midian is, but they don't know there's a city of monsters underneath.
Yeah, they know Midian is a cemetery.
They know Midian is, which is weird. Who's ever like named a cemetery city? Do they do that? I don't know. I mean,
well, they said
I'm
it was
not Canadian.
Prospectors all came out there, so maybe
all cemeteries
it was
have some kind of a name.
Yeah, it probably was. Like
yeah, I guess
town.
So. But taken out of the Bible or whatever, like this, like.
yeah, but if someone says,
hey, you guys want to call this
city of Midian, and there's a cemetery called Midian.
Hey, do you guys want to call this graveyard the name of the evil devil city Moses took like killed or whatever?
yeah, might as well. It's Canada. Nobody's going
to
notice.
I don't know.
I can't remember. Yeah, they said something about how, like, well, they said, like, Midian was, like, an evil city. I mean, evil as in probably just immortal people that, like, Moses, like, gathered an army to go, like, kick their asses or whatever.
Might be.
Which is, like, another, like, statement of this movie. This movie is, like, constantly talking about, like...
This movie is a political statement.
I don't know if it's a political... I mean, it's definitely...
We'll get to that.
It's a statement
let's
movie.
Let's try to lay out, like, that, what the framework of the plot.
Well, yeah.
Then
we'll
come back and talk
Boone,
about the
Boone's
themes.
In the hospital after Decker gave him the LSD, and he tripped out, and I don't know if Decker thought that would get him killed, and then he could just blame him. Or what was going on with that?
I don't know
that.
What the fuck that was.
But then he winds up in the hospital with, and the character's name, I don't know what his human name is, but his Midian name is Narcissi, which is short, narcissist. He's the actor. Yeah. And so that's one.
And I don't get about that guy. Okay, he cuts his, because he's like,
to show his true face.
Yeah, I'm going to show my, but it's like, is that supposed to be a fucking anatomically correct? Like, it's like, what the fuck is that?
So you see all the muscle structure underneath his flesh.
But that's, not a whole lot of muscle structure.
But that's what I'm saying. That's not anatomically correct muscle structure. That's why I was like, what the fuck is he supposed to be?
I thought he was like a reptile dude.
Yeah.
Is he like a monster underneath that?
Well, yeah.
And he's just never pulled off his face?
Because he is a monster, right? Because Decker is treating him as well.
Decker kills him, apparently. This is the way that I gathered it. It's when it's like, you know, Decker's like, I can talk to him, but I need privacy. And he closes the drape over the window, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
He kills Narcisse, and after Narcisse, like, wakes back up from his death, he goes
You can only go to Midian if you're dead.
But that's the thing. Is it all... Because some of them are just monsters. They were born that way.
Well, they say there's different ones.
That's why they show them going through the Inquisition, but then you see ones like
Boone and
Narcissi that have to die first to get there. So wouldn't that make them ghosts not monsters?
That's what I'm saying. It's the same way as having ghosts, it's calling them one thing, though.
Yeah, because they all have... I mean, there's no... Like, we don't ever in the movie see explicitly vampires.
No.
Right?
No.
But there are...
Rachel
different
has
monsters
a lot of
that
the,
have vampire qualities, you know, spread around them, but they mixed in with like these other,
monster that one
tributes,
chick turns the fog.
Yeah, that's Rachel.
Yeah,
right. You know, the one guy bites Boone.
Yeah,
and
so
fucking
this is
turns Boone.
Yeah, Pelequin. So Pelequin, the guy with the tentacles on his head or whatever, bites Boone.
Dreads. Which you would think you would think just from like the images of this movie, you'd think that guy would have more to do with this movie.
Pelequin?
I guess so.
Well, are you talking about the one that bit Boone and actually started the prophecy going? And how did he not notice that that was his picture on the wall? All those years.
But it's really not in that. But he's really not in the movie all that much. Or his role in the movie, all he does is bite Boone, then he fucking goes away.
Well, he harasses Laurie in the one section.
But he's some of the best makeup.
Yeah, he seems to. I thought he had a lot of screen time. I remember him like popping up quite a bit.
I mean, popped up.
Well, he's got
like,
some of the best lines.
I mean, that's just my problem with this movie. Not a lot for these characters that do. They don't
and they're
have
pussies
shit.
Too. They're fucking pussies.
Well, pussies have nothing to do with it. They just have nothing.
Not
to,
in a Clive Barker movie.
There's no fucking to me at least. There's like no story here. There's like just nothing really driving. It's just Boone discovering Midian. That's the whole movie.
There is a story. It's just that the focus.
It's not great.
The focus is on the monsters. This.
Oh
the
my god.
It's
just how poor.
It's about Decker. Well, it's about Boone, Decker, and Laurie. That's if you look at that's the story of the movie, and like all of these other characters, of which there's a fuckload.
But it's just
show up.
Poor us monsters. That's what it is. Poor us monsters. even though we do kill humans, I know, you know, we eat humans.
It's against the law.
They hunt us.
No, so the monsters have retreated, and so it's like a Lylesburg, played by Pinhead Doug Bradley, has laid. He's the keeper of the law.
Yes.
So in Midian, there is a god who's apparently dismembered god called Baphomet in their tabernacle,
the light bright god,
satanic as shit.
And
well, what was that trying to say? I was trying to piece that together. Like, I don't get his. What is his power diminished? Why is he? He's like half there,
but he's got lightning storms apparently in the room where he's at.
Well, I just realized this as you guys were talking. Boone is Moses. He's there to deliver his people.
Yeah, that's part of the allegory of this movie. It is a savior. It's a savior story. It's because he has to die. He's crucified, basically, right?
People.
Yeah, and has to be reborn, and then leads.
Oh, that's a good
night breed.
It's like a satanic Moses. Right. That's exactly what the fuck this is.
Well, it's the Jesus.
Oh my god! Yeah. Not a genius.
Jesus.
I don't really like the fact that like when Boone dies and becomes like a monster, he's not actually. He's just. Still looks like himself,
but you know what?
Like, and he can turn into his monster form, which is just him with some weird symbols on his face. You know, I mean, like the fact that he's most of the time just looks like himself, and everybody else is like a deformed,
free,
truly free.
Not all. Rachel doesn't.
Well, hold on. I want to talk. What Tom's talking about to me is so fucking important because I was just bitching about Amazing Spider-Man 2 about how the Green Goblin gets ugly, transforms, then at the end of the movie, the guy walks in and is like, "You look better." He comes and goes. And the hold on, Beast in X-Men First Class can go back and forth. You know, I mean, they do that. It's the idea of like. It's having your cake and eating it too. I want to be a monster. I don't want to be ugly. I want to be able to change back and forth. It's saying, oh, I want to be able to shapeshift and change and have all these powers. But, oh, I also got to be ugly? I still want to be beautiful. What if I just turn ugly? Well,
that's where I'll give Travis points. He's got a strict... I don't want to say moral code, but a line. Like, if you serve the devil,
you can't come back. If you're a monster,
you can't come back. Damn it. Ben Grimm doesn't get to change back from the thing. He stays
fucking Dr. Alec Holland doesn't go from Swamp Thing to beautiful Alec Holland. You have to fucking... I mean, to me, you lose all character importance if you do... I get to change because that ruins the point. It's not about, like, okay, say you have a horrible temper or a it's not about, like, how... Oh, I get to freak out on people. Then I get to be nice and change back. No.
Like Banner.
That's not the way it is, you know? Once you have a personality, you usually stick with that, and people view you as that personality.
I didn't get to transform back and forth.
Once
he became a monster, and he even had, like, an initiation rite to become the monster, and, like...
He's tested by the blood of Baphomet or whatever. Right.
And it's like, why was he even dreaming about Midian anyway? If only monsters get to get invited, why the fuck? If he has to still get initiated to become a monster?
It's
a prophecy.
There's something within him that was always drawing him there. It was just... because this is preordained, apparently, that he was eventually going to be bitten by Pelequin because Shirasazi has a dream of Boone the way Boone has dreams of them. You know, so that's why I kind of wish
maybe as a kid, maybe he would have committed one murder or, you know, something to prove he's a fucking monster. You know, because whatever you say, his name Narcisse or whatever his name?
Narcisse. Parker said it was Narcisse, but
Narcisse is that, yeah.
So it's like, I mean, he... It obviously proved he was a monster. He's fucking weird.
Yeah.
He's like a necrophiliac. He fucking likes to... He's already got thumb razor things that I'm sure is for something.
Boone becomes a monster that, you know, after... Because he's been bitten by Pelequin, after he's died, he resurrects.
But before
he's
a
dead man walking around.
But he would find somewhere where he could be forgiven for what he was.
But he wouldn't have dreams about Midian if he wasn't already a monster. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think, Travis, you hit it on the head when you said that they want... To have their cake and eat it too. What doesn't sell tickets is a guy that stays a monster. What does, you know, it becomes even maybe a date movie because they have the romance in there. You know, I mean, from a corporate or a studio aspect, you want the leading man to be able to turn back into the leading man so he can,
But there's
something that they can identify with when they go to the theater and they can see this good looking guy go and save, you know, all these monsters.
But see, the thing is, we're saying monsters. Actually, the creature. creatures. It was man that was the monsters in this movie. Yeah, it wasn't the creature.
That's what this movie, I think the intention is. It's like in this movie, the monsters are like, I don't think you know that. Aside from the fact that we watched an intro where Clive Barker said the monsters are supposed to be sympathetic. Watching the movie, it's like, you know, the first experience that you have with the monsters, Pelequin and the guy with the big forehead, like, they seem somewhat fearsome, right? I mean, yeah. Like, it wants to eat, you know.
Well, one guy's a blue devil.
Yeah. With a, what's that? The,
it's not looking
it's
biting.
Like a bullfighter.
It looks like a gypsy.
It's like it's the thing the bullfighters wear. The,
is
like,
it like a Spanish? Like
yeah.
A,
yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he looked like a Roma.
Yeah.
He was always a cool looking character, though.
He's definitely one of the cool. Like I said, I think the most interesting characters designs in this movie have the least to do. And I'm like, oh, he looks awesome. I want him to be like something to do.
Yeah. I mean, you remember, well, that's, I guess, the thing. There's a lot of character monster designs in this. I think at one point, this kind of held like a Guinness World Record for having the most like on set made up monsters.
Whoa.
Like beating like the Star Wars films or something like that. But I'm sure that's been surpassed. You know, because I keep thinking like when they actually Boone goes to Midian after he's killed. Lori follows him there because she's in love with him and wants to find out what happened to him, you know, and realize somebody stole the body or she thinks he's still alive and goes down into. You know, this underground city, and we finally get to see it for the first time. And there's this huge set, which they actually built, which Tom said reminded him of.
It looked like
Goblin
Zion.
King.
The
Goblin King Lair.
Goblin King Lair in the first.
This one they actually built.
Finger in the eye. Finger in the eye.
Yeah, we got him good.
So it's a big sound stage with like all these suspended rope bridges and all this stuff. And there's this menagerie of creatures just that we get to see. Some of them were, you know, these people made up in this design for like one shot. I mean, there are certain ones that are focused on more, which is like Pelequin, the guy with the big, you know,
Jay Leno.
The Jay Leno
the
jaw.
The Moon Man.
The guy who has the big fat guy
Kinski
with the two.
Is his name.
Yeah, that weird fat guy with
Kinski,
I was thinking, I was like, oh, man, if this movie was directed by Tim Burton, this movie would have been awesome. This movie was made to be directed by Tim Burton. The guy with the two, like, snake things that come out of his belly.
Yeah, they didn't show pictures of the actor, but there's a character called Onaka, and when he's got that samurai knot in the back, I'm assuming that's who he is, the guy with the two tentacle arms. I tried to find images of all the characters, and they didn't show a few of them. So, like Ashbury, I thought
he had the weird
poor guy that burned up.
It's
not, he's the priest.
Yeah.
There goes the neighborhood.
You know, it's like the narrative is overloaded with characters. Overloaded? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Because
they have no importance. They show it to you.
No, I'm saying aside from the monsters, like there's the monsters, but then there's also like a roster of human characters that come in. There's the police chief Eigerman.
There's another inspector.
There's help me out here. Those are like significant.
Basically Decker, Lori,
Detective Joyce,
the priest, the inspector, the black inspector guy, crazy cop guy.
Yeah, so those are like the primary
like five people.
Human people, and then the primary Nightbreed are Boone, Narcisse, Lori, Rachel, her
the
daughter,
master guy,
Shinasazi.
Yeah, the Shinasazi, the porcupine woman.
That's awesome,
horn guy.
That's a cool design.
I mean, there's like a number of them that get more screen time than the rest of them. Yeah, Lylesburg, the Moses type character who leads the night breed.
You know, with some of them, you just can't. I mean, like, there's monsters that, like, they're stuck on the floor for practical reasons. And, you know, I mean, like, they're.
Turkey man?
Yeah. Turkey like, man. They're.
That was a cool
I think
design.
Somebody said it looks like a pile of shit on the floor. And that's, you know,
I
like,
think that
she's
Tom.
Big sure.
Eloquently put, Tom. Eloquently put, sir.
One thing I want to say, though, man, I swear to God, though, think of Boone's face with all the squiggly lines and blah, blah, blah. Okay, now think.
Carving.
Exactly. Yeah, now think of how much that's used in fucking movies nowadays. That's always used for monsters nowadays. Monsters so and much. Demons always use that sort of circular, like what? Like, like hell, even Hellboy. Hellboy had those circular things all over his hand of doom or whatever.
It's like Hellboy's the last time, I mean, that I've seen like that kind of in the troll market. right, in Hellboy 2.
Right.
You kind of get that same kind of...
it's like a Mos Eisley.
Yeah, here's a bunch of monsters that we're just going to see for... You know, it's just
monster land.
It's a chance for, like...
And there's a weird, like...
for, like, character designers to just kind of run wild and come up with all these crazy things that we're going to use to populate these things.
Yeah.
I appreciate that kind of stuff because it's very, like, you know... Well, you know, I mean, you get to see, like, these little flashes of, like, this, you know,
it's a world.
Imagination. Yeah, they're world.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Star Wars universe, I mean, like my brother's the type of person that knows the individual, like, species names and the planets that every Mos Eisley fucking alien belongs to. And it's like, Jesus Christ, all it is a little scene that, like, points to him. Yeah. But then that inspires people to be like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, but it sets off your inner detective.
But it's all gone now.
That, to me, that's actually what... no, to me, that's actually the same power comic books have. You see something interesting, like Iron Man, what's that about?
Yeah.
You see something visually so appealing and weird that you just have to know more about it.
But I think that is still, like, the primary, like, appeal to me of this movie. Right. It's like, it does
the monster,
have that...
The creature feature?
Yeah, it's this creature feature, like, you know, it's like, because I was sitting there, even while we were watching it, I'm like, what is the closest movie... that you could compare it to this, like, well, either as a storyline,
maybe, or for our listeners, because they might be screaming right now, like, just say it. It's, I mean, most recently it's Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Most recently, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. It's absolutely Guardians.
I would have to think.
And then Hellboy 2 would have been second.
It's about a man. It's about a man that belongs in the real world.
But no, I'm just saying that.
I would say it's Avatar.
I'm just saying, we're talking.
Well, it is.
No, we're talking about showcasing the, like,
that
the monsters
all in one
the,
spot.
Oh,
yeah. I mean,
Oh, okay.
I thought you meant the actual story.
The actual story
of a man being an outsider and whatever until he goes over to the supposed bad sider outsider group, and then finds out. They're actually normal people.
Yeah.
The other one,
now I have to save
Chronicles
them
of
from
Narnia,
being destroyed.
The final battle.
Yeah?
All the creatures in that. The centaurs, all the different creatures in there.
Yeah. I just wonder if I don't even know something that's contemporary to this movie that's like, you know, I mean, maybe like Return of the Living Dead, you get a lot of zombies or something.
Well,
the fact that they could design a bunch of different things.
Well,
like each one of them, it's cool, you know, kind of like in a Star Wars.
I would say,
I know there was a book,
Nightbreed.
Maybe, you know, something like that, where you
got all these Halloween town
people. Or Beetlejuice or something.
Yeah.
But, like, where you could, like, they made a Nightbreed book that came out at the time that this was released.
Oh, yeah?
That actually had, like, all of the, you know, like, these stills of all the creatures that were created. And that's why people knew there was more
to the movie. Clive Barker's original paintings?
Maybe.
Because that's what, like, fucks me up about, like, the more I look into Clive Barker's, like, paintings, when I see his sculpture designs and his toy designs, then I actually see his paintings. It's like the guy's got a weird paint style. It's almost, I don't want to say children bookish.
It's like sketch-like or something, right?
Like Tim Burton's. It's kind of cartoony, but kind of still like, it's edgy and gritty, but kind of cartoony.
Mysticism.
It looks weird.
Yeah.
But
it's
it fucking transfers.
Style.
Like, it looks like, oh my god, that looks exactly like what his painting look like. Like, what's her name? The porcupine lady?
Shunasazi.
Like, she fucking, if you look at his original painting of her or any pencil art of her, I mean, it fucking look, I mean, they just put her on screen. I mean, he has such a weird visual idea of the, I mean, just look at the Hellraiser people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, like, that's one of the things, I'm trying to think, like, of Lord of Illusions. So Clive Barker made three movies and then, you know, retired, but it was Hellraiser, Nightbreed, and Lord of Illusions, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to think, like, of Lord of Illusions. It has a strong design.
It has all the people that did stuff to themselves, but not necessarily creatures.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they did have, like, the weird skull face guy, you know.
Yeah, but those Hellraiser guys, like, you remember those Cenobites.
Dude, I remember he came out with a toy line called Tortured Souls that were they were supposed
those
to
still
those
nice.
Are fucking awesome
those
looking.
And
they're so scary. Like, to me, that, like, changed the way I see a demon in hell. Like, oh my god, it's not just like the beast with the wings and the horns. Like, they could be, like, so weird and distorted, you know, the weird features and the weird S&M fucking bullshit. Like,
I think they just sold a series of those on Comic Book Men in the first season. They? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So he goes to Midian, and I don't know. It's like, oh yeah, look at the weird monster. Look at that weird monster. Look at that weird monster.
Yeah. And then but Decker also arrives in Midian, but he brings the redneck police force and the townspeople, apparently.
Operation Hate, as we like to call it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like crazy hate.
Exterminate all of it. So it's like, yeah, because it's just like, what did, you know, like, it really, what, how did this actually get going? It's like Decker goes up there and says, there's freaks up there, Boone's up there. The rest
how did
of
he
them,
convince people that there's a world of monsters? Yeah, so,
I would think the doctor coming out going, he's got no pulse, is what finally pushed the sheriff over the edge to go, let's go get him, boys.
Yeah, there's something weird going up in Midian. So they rally like all of the, and it's hilarious. And I don't think these scenes were in the theatrical cut. You have to remind
one?
The stuff with all the redneck townspeople.
It's to very a degree, much, but not like it was.
It was very ridiculous. Much
like, it reminds me of that scene in the original Dawn of the Dead, where like all the guys are like gearing up to go hunt the zombies, and you see like all that, you know, and they play banjo music and stuff.
I was going
to
say, like, I mean, the pie fight, is, like,
yeah,
it's almost ridiculous.
Yeah, but it is in this movie. It does read as like so. What would you say? Over the top. Like, but this is rednecks time.
Running around with those buffalo hats with the horns on.
I just picked that up this time. Like, at the bar, there's like buffalo days or whatever.
Are you sure they just didn't shoot this in Canada? This is supposed to take place in Canada.
Yeah, because she says we got to get out of Calgary for a couple days.
I didn't hear any stories
or
cares.
That's what I was going to say.
Let's get the care.
I was going to say that when we first started, so we'll tell you what it's all about.
Yeah. I think
you'd be the security guard.
I think what it is the social commentary is so on the head that they had to change it from America to Canada just to kind of...
So they didn't look like they were bashing us.
Yeah.
Because we don't care if they bash Canada.
It was so...
Right, we don't care.
It's a sleight of hand.
Unless you're a fan and you're in Canada, and then we care.
I mean, this movie makes me feel bad for Hillbilly. I almost feel like they're the victims of this movie. This movie isn't about how monsters are victimized. It's about how hillbillies are like, what the? This is like this is like blackface for fucking white.
It is kind of interesting that it's trying to take a subject and say, like, monsters are usually one dimensional in movies, and so now it's going to give them more dimension. They live together and they have, like, you know, kids, and there's all this other stuff.
And they farm.
Like, you know, love the monsters. And look at these one-dimensional now hillbillies coming. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's the flip of the
social commentary.
Social commentary.
I think that's my problem with like any liberal view. It's usually a little bit more.
Man envies, he destroys. And like they say in a lot of movies, you know, what man doesn't understand, he destroys. So
if you ever look at a white man in a Spike Lee film, you'll see it. I mean, it's there. You know, it's the same thing. It's a one-dimensional character coming into this complex society, this community that it's whatever the director is, you know.
Traditionally, those are flipping the point of view around because they're like trying to say, usually in movies, you present the other side from a one-dimensional.
I don't watch a lot of his films, but I like Clockers. I thought they balanced it out a little bit better between the detectives.
I think it's his early stuff. Here's
this cookie cutter character. We're going to stick him in here. He doesn't feel right because we're more evolved than he is. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're kind of like, I don't know, what is it?
But this, obviously...
let's not go there. But
I mean, I don't know why we're dancing around it. Obviously...
Because it's a minefield, but go ahead. Tap dance.
Clive Barker is a homosexual male, all right? This is his way of saying, hey, I've always been seen as a freak, and... We're not like this. We're nice people. And, you know, I've always had to go this way. I mean, the guy's been a horror writer. I mean, not only a homosexual. I mean, we're into horror. People think, all horror people are serial killers. So I'm not saying just him being a homosexual had anything to do with it alone. but just your interest in right. sci-fi, he's, fantasy, well, that's like you can art.
Interpret it in multiple ways, I think.
Right. Like, yeah, it's not just, it's just, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But we all know that whether it be we were horror geeks or we were comic geeks or, in my case, both. Right. You know, we were always kind of the outcast, so we understand yeah. how that feels.
Well,
you know?
I mean, like I was telling the guys earlier, it's like when, you know, it's like when I saw this movie in 1990, it read to me as like, you know, this is the movie about the outsider that's usually, you know, the persecuted one in horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so now we're actually saying like, you know, and I mean, as a kid, I would identify with like the Frankenstein monster or something like that. You know, he was always being chased around and like, why are they chasing him? It's like, wait, yeah, it's the misunderstood monster. Actually, Frankenstein probably fills in, you know, the most, I think, of, you know, how I respond to this movie. It's like, this is the Frankenstein story, the creature, from the creature's point of view, yeah. as the villagers, you know, the
but even Frankenstein's revenge was the monster's own undoing.
And yeah.
That's what these movies always miss. They always try to have that revenge, but they always miss that, dude, that revenge is also your own fucking undoing, right, yeah, god damn it. You know, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
It's, yeah.
Well,
it's,
that line, do not cross it.
Can't.
Well, and this, you know, I mean.
But they don't here. They lose everything, basically. There's only a few of them left at the end of the movie.
He has to take him to the new promise
land. Yeah, because he's
Moses.
He's Moses at that point, or Jesus, or whatever. He has to destroy Midian in order to save it, you know, and bring.
I'm going to hell for that one.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the other side that you can read it, I mean, and this is the thing, we were watching it tonight, you know, it was like, you know, Clive Barker being gay, you're reading gay into like everything that happens in the movie. And it's like, oh my God, this is like, you know, the Nightbreed, they live in an underground city where, you know, they hang, well, you were saying,
look at how,
clubbing,
but,
like, all the time.
But it's not, I mean, I just want to defend the, you know, just so it doesn't seem like we're gay bashing.
No, I think
it's because Clive Barker is so sexual. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
Hellraiser, Clive Barker is a fucking sexual writer. I mean, he doesn't hide it.
Human condition,
yeah. It's one of those like, Jesus, Clive,
But I think
you're supposed to hide it a little bit.
If you read the movie that way, which I think we can, you know, now that it's like, now that just having watched it, I think, you know, you can read it as Decker is like, the way that he responds to Boone, if you listen to like his dialogue, the first thing that they say to each other when Boone calls him up, he says like, "What'd you miss me?" You know, I think. And toward the end, when Decker shows back up again, he says, "Oh God, what did he say?" But it was something again. It was very familiar. Right. It's like Decker is the jilted lover, right?
Right.
He's upset that Boone is now seeing Laurie. Laurie represents the pull of heterosexuality. Boone is like going the gay way to
Boone was the gay way, and he showed Decker Midian. Okay, so Decker's like,
monsters.
I have to kill it.
Oh, so
it, his it. Own so self-loathing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cracked it. I am now incredibly uncomfortable with this movie.
But this is all just
the only thing, this doesn't mean
this is what the movie's about. We're just reading into it.
No, but see, this is what I'm
finding things that aren't there.
But this is what I enjoy about horror films. You know, as like a genre, they are able to deal. Like, if you saw a movie that was about what we're saying this movie's about as subtext, on its surface, you wouldn't go fucking see this, right? Yeah, I mean, well, it may not be interesting
that's
to
what's
you,
so
but
great,
you
though.
Can get
it
these is themes across well, in a yeah. horror movie where it's like, it's not the surface is it's a monster movie. You can appreciate it as a monster movie. Right. And then there's this, like, other.
Same thing with sci-fi, you can just deal with. But like, who wants to go see My Mother's Dying with Cancer? Yeah. Hey, let's make it Your Mother's Dying of an Alien fucking impregnation.
Yeah, or they're turning into awesome. A
fly. How old is Clive Barker now? I mean,
60s.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, so like in that era, in the 1960s, I don't know if you guys remember, it was actually referred to in JFK when Kevin Bacon's character is talking. He talked about the homosexual underground, and now you got a whole class of people that live underground.
Yeah, they're hiding from society.
Well, it's also, I think that relationship, if we're reading it that way, is carried out like almost all the way to the end. How does Boone kill Decker, right?
He penetrates him.
He has a growth coming out of his body.
It's phallic.
That he impales Decker on.
Well, but they've always said that about stabbings in movies. Jeez, it's about the penetration.
He penetrates Decker to kill him. That is the final, like, way that he gets through the... Yeah. So it's totally there.
Then he throws him off a cliff.
I need a shower.
Cliff. And then he goes back up to Lori, and Lori's like, you know, you got to stay with me. And he's
this
like,
is the nail in the coffin right here.
The nail in the coffin of...
of the homosexuality tendencies throughout the
show. Well, but this is all.
I got a nightbreed, baby. I got to break up with you because I'm nightbreed.
And that's when it's raining men should have queued up.
But so
that was Lori, Gary, by the way.
Lori desperate to keep Boone with her.
Travis on vocals.
Well, actually, yeah, but I mean that does play like in this cut. So maybe if this is the intention of the movie, that story between Lori and Boone does like accentuate this a little more strongly in this movie, that she is like, you know, stay with me. I love you and I want you to stay with like me this whole time. And
we're supposed to be together, she says.
Yeah, we're supposed to be together.
Because he's like, I don't want it. He walked away, and she fucking killed herself to, like, make him bite her and turn her.
In the beginning of the film, she was like, just tell the doctor whatever. Tell him you're good. You're cured. You know, like, she was trying to turn him from the beginning of the film.
She was doc-blocking him?
Doc-blocking. So she, like, forces him, basically. He could have had all this weird monster strange for the rest of eternity, and now he's going to be fucking stuck with her. Imagine.
And she's a shitty singer. So, you got to listen to that.
Oh, God, yeah, let's talk about it. I'm surprised. Yeah, let's go back to the real monster of this movie, and that's the fucking cover of Johnny Get Angry. Oh, my God, I love that song, man. That's a great classic song, Johnny Get Angry. I forget who originally does it.
That scene in the garage where she comes in, she did look good. But then, I got to go rehearse. Yeah, like you should rehearse more.
No, it's like a song from like the 50s. Is it? Yeah. Johnny Get Angry, Get Mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
fine. Somebody else covered it.
That's my movie.
Yeah.
That's the song.
Yeah, there is a... yeah, because in this version, we learn that Lori is like a lounge singer or whatever she's saying.
Oh, it's like... no, she's like trying to be like... it's supposed to be like a...
she's Diane Lane in Streets of Fire without the backup band.
Yes.
Because that band was boring.
I was honestly expecting William Dafoe to bust in, kidnap her.
We find out that Boone is a mechanic. Yes. Yeah, you didn't know that before.
No, that was a pointless scene too, because that was like an introduction scene, right?
Yeah, that was out of order.
That scene was not like the introduction of a character.
In the script, I remember like they show a little bit of it in the special features, and I think like after the dream, it like goes to like you see sparks, and that becomes him with a welder, and I'm like, did they take that scene and put it in the wrong place?
It seemed like, dude, it totally seems like it. So that's revisionist
that they probably didn't have that there the very first time.
Because I never, like, I mean, when you get into a movie, you can feel those beats, right? Yeah, you can feel like, oh, God, that's why this movie had three fucking endings. You know, you can feel the beats, like, wrap up,
But it also feels like they're setting up for a sequel, too.
Yeah, it does. Because at the end of it, the priest, Ashbury?
He's going to burn them all.
Ashbury gets, you know, he's a Catholic priest who's a drunk, who's in the drunk tank. The cops, the rednecks, take him with them to Midian, where he becomes like, you know, you're killing children, this is wrong. And he has to see what's down there, you know, beneath Midian. And he sees Baphomet, and I think it's, again, like, you know,
he was burned by Baphomet.
And then, he's burned by Baphomet's blood.
It's another thing about
seeing... he becomes like, now I can sense their god out in the world, and I'm going to hunt it down and kill them all. And that's, like, this weird, like, lead-off for, like, Nightbreed, the TV show.
Like, today, that would be the end credits scene. Like, after the credits.
Did he say he's going to kill them all?
Yeah, he's going to kill them all.
Yeah.
Or destroy them all or something like
weird.
That.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's a Nightbreed who was changed by the god who wants revenge on all of them now for the way, and that whole subplot, the priest is like missing, primarily from the theatrical cut.
Yeah. Now, what I want to talk real briefly before we get into wrap ups about the novel Cabal,
right?
Like, I haven't read it. It's one of the only Clive Barker things.
I haven't read it.
What are the differences? What are the big differences between...
Oh, God. Okay, so I read it so long ago. God, I mean, I want to say, I mean, from my My memory of it is that this is a closer adaptation to what the book is.
I think, man, with Clive Barker writing it, it's got to be relatively
close. I think it's it's a little less explicit than the book is, because I remember there being like a sex scene in the jail cell when Boone and Laurie are reunited. That's not in this. But I think like the ending, I don't remember if Ashbury's in it or not, but I remember Midian gets destroyed and like Boone has to like, you know, take them to another place. And that's basically how it wraps up.
Well, and the other thing in this version, it doesn't show Decker at the end where he comes back to life. Did it? I didn't see
no.
it.
No. Because is that in the theatrical? Well, the theatrical also changes, allows Narcisse to live.
Right, right.
Because like he's like, if you headed
by Decker,
it's like you'll need me, and you know I'll be there or whatever. Yeah. And Laurie and Boone are taking off to go somewhere, and Narcisse is alive.
Well, and that's the thing, and it never shows. Eigerman coming back as Darth Maul. That's not in there. And yeah, the priest choking him out. Yeah, that's not in there. Yeah. And then, but it shows, it says, I have seen their God and he burned me and I want to burn him back. And then.
That is in the other one?
No, that's in the original. And then that's when he's got Decker up almost in a crucified position.
Oh.
And then Decker's
coming back. Oh, so like Decker's like his Christ?
Yes. Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, fuck
yeah, Decker becomes his guy. Decker becomes his guy. Decker becomes
his. I kind of like that. Crazy. So,
huh.
Weird. Yeah, this is weird. Oh, shit.
Weird.
I had some other points.
Do we?
I'm sorry.
Was, but no, I don't know. That's all right. It was just before we wrap up. But
yeah, do we want to wrap it?
You know, I mean, the other thing I think about, you know, the finale of this movie, it's like it kind of does like go all out bug nuts crazy by the end of it. When you're under, you know, Midian's exploding, there's, well, for because everything explodes in the 90s. And there's people running around everywhere, and they unleash these berserkers, which are these like giant,
they were awesome
rubber creature suits that, you know,
they were awesome. Crazy. They look like every creature of hell I've ever, like, if you play like video games like Splatterhouse, or like they just look like the monsters of the fucking, like, I think that's one thing Clive Barker really did. He changed the ideas of the design of demons and shit. He just fucking, oh man, knocked it out of the ballpark. Like, say, like, those are scary images, man. Yeah, you can tell they all have football pads as, like, one of the building blocks of the monster suit, because they all had those same similar, like, shoulder arch. Yeah. But still, I thought they were fucking cool looking.
Yeah, I like this. There's this underworld order to these this monster world, you know, where, like, they do still, like, they got to lock these guys up because they're the really bad monsters, you know? Yeah. I mean, like,
they were the lost tribe or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, actually, that's the thing that this one restores is there's an Inquisition sequence or something. Well, no,
that's
like
in the original.
As long as this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, that was what I thought when he shows them the past or whatever. Excited.
Yeah, and they show the past and how, like, you know, I mean, I thought that was a Nazi boot.
The evil
Christian space gun.
Yeah. And there were guys with, you know, the Klan hats. This is like a flashback where you see, it's very stylized. You see all these monsters being persecuted by,
By the fucking Christians.
Yeah.
Because the Inquisition's here and here to stay.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. All three weapons are a surprise.
And it's told, or it's seen through the eyes of a child. She's the one that.
Well, Babette shows that to Lori. And then Laurie flashes back and sees it all. Because that's why I always like that scene where all like the skulls' eyes lit up. And
I like the idea of like, what would you even call that? Lineal memory, or like memory that survives through genes and through...
genetic memory?
Would you call that genetic memory?
Yeah, well, yeah, because she was never there.
Genetic memory.
Well, we don't know. We don't know
supposedly, if that was there or not. There's there's an awesome part in the original Planet of the Apes novel where that's how all the monkeys find out the past about the humans, is they're able to tap into the brain, and every human actually has the entire human history, you know, in our brains. We all remember it subconsciously, you know, because we all come from the same seed, right? Yeah. You know, or whatever the fuck. Interesting idea. That's all I had, folks.
Okay.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
On this week's mailbag segment, we got a comment from Dom Cree on Facebook, facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. If you want to have your voice heard on Saturday Night Freak Show, get a hold of us on facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. This is about the Nightmare on Elm Street 3 episode, or past episode. Dom says, cool episode, guys. Got a big laugh out of Gary and his Aerobicide review. Ha ha ha. Truly awesome. Would have loved to have heard Travis singing Dream Warriors as per last episode as the
We're
intro.
We're the Dream Warriors!
There you go.
Don't want to dream no more!
You ask, we deliver.
There you go. So, thanks again. Well, thank you, Dom, for listening.
Yes, that's awesome. Fantastic. There wasn't really a question.
Dom,
there,
you
right?
keep sending movies our way. We'll keep reviewing them. We have no standards. I will look through them all. Send them our way, buddy.
Let's wrap it up.
Nightbreed. Holy Hellcats.
Holy Hellcats. I like that. That's the name of copyright. Saturday Night Pre-Show. The Holy Hellcats.
Holy Hellcats. Tom? No. This movie is. It's the first time I've seen it. This movie is the first time I've seen it.
And to wrap up, butcher the English language.
That's the beast talking, not the man, the beast.
Sorry, folks. It's good. It's something that you should watch. You should check out because it's so brilliant because it is dealing, and I think it is. I think we figured it out tonight. I think it's solidified. This is a story about. A class of people of the homosexual descent that are, you know, it's a story like about their persecution, really. And you can see that in the film. I don't think that we're reading into this. I think that it's there. But also, the cool thing is it shows that, I mean, for anybody out there that feels that you are misunderstood, or you don't feel like you're wanted, or you feel like you're, you know, you can't be yourself, this movie says that you can be, you know. I mean, this movie is for everybody. It's not just the homosexuals.
Unless you're a redneck.
Unless you're a redneck.
You're a fucking redneck.
And then we can't forgive you.
We can't forgive you. Yeah. Thanks, Tom. I was getting on my soapbox. He kicked me off. That's perfect. Yeah. This movie is fantastic. You should check it out. I highly recommend it. I haven't seen the original, so I don't know if...
interesting.
I don't know, I don't have anything to base it off of other than, I mean, I would say watch this cut because there's a lot of monsters and it's a lot of fun. Watch it. Love it. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It just get colder.
I'm going to cover my glass so it doesn't spin it.
Yeah. I kind of disagree with Brent on it's a lot of fun.
That's like saying Hitler kind of disagrees with the Jewish people, but go ahead.
I haven't seen the original. This is my first time seeing it. Apparently the added scenes, the beginning of this movie is extremely well drawn out. It seems like it's way too long. I think the whatever was cut out probably should have been cut out. I tend to not really I saw the, you know, the statement that I was trying to make and it shoved it in my face. And oh. I don't.
That's what he was going for. Here we go.
I tend to not like movies that shove that stuff in your face. I mean, I'm not talking about the.
At least she didn't say down your throat.
Yeah. I thought wow. Captain America 2 was shoving like the.
Let's save that for another fucking pod. We don't have time to even touch on that shit.
When you shove the stuff on my face, it's just blatant and it's just like, the monster designs. We're kind of cool for the time. I thought Boone should have. I think he could have been cooler. He lacked
monster.
He lacked monster, and like he was like, I'm the lead monster, but he never really.
I'm not all the well. That's what the movie's about. He's not all the way monster, man. Right. She was trying to get him back to the natural side. That's why they call her natural. You. Natural? They're naturals, right? They're night breed, they're naturals.
So,
are we the breeders?
Yeah, I didn't really care for it, like, at all. I thought it was kind of... I thought it was going to be exciting. Colin kind of...
Yeah. I'm shocked by this. This is a work of... This is a fantasy film. It's fantasy.
I think the social commentary
Yeah, but see, like, even, like, as Tom's saying, it's like, we weren't pointing it out, because, like, during the movie, with Travis, you know, because Travis is like, well, because I know that Clive Barker's gay, this movie as, you know, this is a gay filmmaker's talking to you, and so then, you know, we were... You know, talking about it during the film. I wonder if, like, Tom, if had watched this by himself, if you would have picked up
on it. You think I tainted
Yes. Well, because, Tom, did you know Clive Barker was gay?
No,
would you have seen it as a gay parable?
No.
Right. So it would have been. Not saying, you know, obviously it's there. But what he's saying now is, like, colored by the fact that, you know, because we were talking about it, now it had a political bent to it that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
It's colored. But. That still wouldn't have fixed, like, it wouldn't have fixed the fact that Boone was just a really lame monster, really lame hero.
He wasn't a hero, he lost.
The beginning being super boring and dull and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I would have saw the monster designs as being cool, but that's the only thing that's positive to take away from this. You know, so... I would avoid it. Maybe look up the monsters on the internet. Check out the cool monster designs.
Is that the end of your wrap-up?
Yeah.
See, I would actually agree with Tom. I really would. I think, I like social. I mean, this is the reason we make stories. We make stories so that people may read them, and if they haven't experienced something, they can at least try to understand what an experience is like, or even, like, I was actually just reading something about a bunch of comic books that they're trying to ban, or they keep trying to ban from school libraries because, oh, it has sex or it has violence. It's like, yeah, but these are things that exist in our real world, you know, so maybe if these kids read about it in stories, they'll have some experience about it. That way, when they are actually faced with it in the real world, they have something. So right. Even though they're inexperienced 100% with reality, they have some experience in a fictionalized, like, they just have something. They have some sort of fucking frame of reference. Not that that's an awesome thing all the time, because supposedly, this is way off base, but supposedly when... the reason Hitler and the Germans sucked ass in Russia is because Hitler only read books about a guy who wrote fiction about Russia, who had never been to Russia. So
and obviously you can't take from every other war.
Yeah, so you can't take stories like that literally, you know, that literally, but still. I agree with you. This movie to me is a little, it's more about the, like, hey, look at the monsters. Oh, there's a monster over there. There's a monster over there. And, you know, yeah, there's the girl, but I've never liked the whole, I mean, to me, this follows the same sort of story that, like, Lost Boys and Near Dark and the whole, like, I'm turning into a monster. I gotta be here. I love ya. And I gotta be human if I love ya. And I'm like, like the Twilight. I do feel like this is a predecessor to Twilight. Like Twilight is the great-grandson of Nightbreed, you know? I truly believe this. Because nowadays we're in that...
In the theatrical
cut. Just look at the CW. Look at every CW show is this, I'm a monster! You know, don't love me, even though I'm a beautiful man. Like, I got a little scar on my eye, and that makes me a monster, you know? So I do think, like, this turned into that, you know. I'm not saying that. Oh, it's the exact same thing. It's cut from the same cloth. But I do think it follows that same idea that, like, people want to feel like, you know. I mean, it is a huge dramatic point, right? It's like, you know, I'm a monster. You can't love me. Nobody can love me. You know. But then it's like, I'm drawn to you. I want to be loved. You know. But I do think this is the instance where I think the social commentary kind of overshadows the fantasy a little bit. We don't have as much as a story as we do really have just social commentary with monsters and hillbillies and, like, it's like, fuck. Like, Jesus, I mean, can't we have some sort of, I mean, they had a mythology, right? And mm-hmm. it's like, they could have dove a little bit more into the mythology. They could have, like, I mean, that guy could have had a better purpose than, like, you came here to destroy Midian. But they wanted to keep that a secret, even though they already had, I mean, they had a mythology. They had shit to tell you, but they didn't tell you because it was supposed to be a shock at the end that, like, you didn't see the prophecy wall. Which but it was like, hey, the opening credits. Shit's already happening. Well, yeah, they are the opening credits. That's for damn sure.
That was painted by Ralph McQuarrie, the conceptual artist on Star Wars.
Whoa. So, like, yeah, I love the monster design. I've always loved Clive Barker. I really still want to read this book because reading Clive Barker and watching Clive Barker, two totally fucking separate things. Two totally separate things. You have to give both its own due, you know, just. But, so. I personally would pass on the Nightbreed, at least especially this director's cut, because, yeah, they totally should have kept that shit out. The studio was right. That's like, God, there's a lot of, like, weird hillbilly comedy.
Well, some of that's in the theatrical cut, but it just seems more abrupt. And you're like, what in the fuck? It's, you know, this way, because they've built it up so much, it's maybe still over the top, but it's you can feel it kind of building, where in the other one, it's just like, where in the fuck did this come from?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even the, I swear to God, I think they introduced Lori two times. They do. He has a bad dream. She, like, wakes him up. They have a talk. Then she, like, goes to the work, her to where he were. It's like, this is two fucking introductions. Nothing at the work scene happened except for introducing her to him.
Right.
It's like, meet me at my place later. They're so sexy.
Overly long kiss.
Well, yeah, it was Clive Barker. Clive Barker's, like, getting your tidy whities. Yes, I want to
see that you LSD your sex scene was another thing that wasn't in the original, and that was like,
I thought that was pretty cool, but I definitely.
Or he's burning all of this.
Well, past. Yeah, but he's what's the point?
Well, because he thinks he killed people, so he's going to burn his evidence.
I understand that part. It's the whole thing with Lori. Just,
but it's like,
this well, because he was drawn to her, man. Yeah. He was going to, if he would have, like, escaped, he would have went back to the gay life.
They're having a love scene with, like,
it all comes back to that.
It does.
He's burning that whole relationship.
He's burning the relationship, yeah, but he can't fucking.
He's setting a fire in the middle of his living room.
This is so sweet. He can't leave that shit. Even though he wants to go to Midian.
Well, yeah.
In the butt. And I'm sorry. That's it. I'm sorry. That's the end of it. So, do not recommend the movie. So, I'm sorry. What are you trying to say, dude? I'm sorry.
Well, he does take that phone call from his doctor in his towel, just getting out of the. Like, early on, knowing who Clive Barker is, I'm like, man, he's just putting these scenes in here.
Which the only. Seen gayer than that was the volleyball scene from Top Gun.
Now, Clive, I want to see your hand when we shoot.
It's like,
man, we're both hands.
Right, so being aware of that, who, like, you know, Bryan Singer is, you know, like, it's different because Clive Barker hasn't been, you know, like, and the guy who did Jeepers Creepers and Powder, right?
Yeah,
like, these are guys who we know. Well, okay, so allegations with Bryan Singer.
Well, supposedly those were dropped. I did, like, look up that recently. Right. They were dropped. But that's just, like...
These are gay guys in Hollywood that are preying on younger... I say prey because they are. They're finding these younger boys at parties and stuff and seducing them, right?
Yeah.
And then in their movies, it's like, if you look at Powder... Oh. Like, Powder's like, Jesus Christ. You know, like, there's stuff in there that you're like, knowing who you are, should you be showing this? And Jeepers Creepers is the same way. I mean, it's about this creeper that targets this kid and just, like, follows him all over the place. And, you know, he's after something in this kid, you know. And, you know, so, and Bryan Singer with that pupil having all these
kids. Bryan Singer in X-Men 2 with Iceman tells his parents he's a mutant. And the parents say,
coming out.
Have you ever thought, but did you ever try not being one? Yeah. It's like, that was a gay scene. Well,
that was a gay scene.
That wasn't even
I don't
hiding.
Have a problem with. You know, I don't have a problem with
but
that.
But that's not, like, at least Nightbreed has subtext. Nightbreed, like I said, if you don't know.
In X-Men. No,
but if you don't know, I'm just saying, if you don't know Clive Barker's gay, that, yeah, you read Nightbreed, you can read Nightbreed as but Bryan Singer having Iceman's parents say the line, have you ever tried not be? I mean, that is literally a, like, parents' gay line to their gay son about, have you ever tried not being gay because it's a choice?
But again, I think
that's when it's like, holy fuck, Bryan Singer, that's not even a goddamn metaphor.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. I don't see why that's not. I don't see why that's a problem. If the filmmaker is gay and brings those gay sensibilities to it, that's fine.
Because being a mutant is a genetic.
But I have an issue when you have someone who is basically, we're talking about maybe. Okay, so
you're saying pedophile?
Yes. Yeah. When someone who has been doing something that's like, okay, this is kind of sick because you're, you know, these are like because you're basically a criminal and you're doing, you know, but. In Clive Barker stuff, he's having like these guys parading around in, you know, whatever their underwear.
Hell, yeah.
It's like that's a different thing. It's like it doesn't appeal to me, but it's
well you remember the old Hollywood saying.
It's like it's the same way we would ask a fucking girl to like take her shirt off. I mean, it's just the same way. We find it sexy when I love every horror movie when a chick comes home from school and changes his shirt.
Yeah.
That's all she has to do is change her shirt after school. You don't want to be wearing that shirt.
Oh, yeah.
You just want to.
I just watched something the other day where like a girl had to go into the shower at some point, and I'm like, every Hollywood actress knows at some point you have to take a shower.
So if I'm watching Clive Barker and I see a guy like I'm in my towel, I'm in my tidy whities because Clive Barker's like, then want to see that.
Yeah,
it's
so yeah, but Clive doesn't forget about us heteros.
Yeah, well, but yeah,
it's good to go on. Well, I think he's.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we should have done
that. The old Hollywood saying, what I was saying is, the only thing that would kill your career faster than a dead hooker was a live boy. So,
God damn. That's all of fucking all of it.
So, all right. So, is that. You're good?
Yeah.
Okay. So why do I got to follow that? That's my thing. Now I'm wishing I'd have sat on the other side of Travis because I got to follow his rap. Awesome. I loved Nightbreed. I hate this movie.
Wow.
Hate it. First time in history of the show that I've done, I do not like this cut. I think there was a lot of scenes that should have stayed lost to time because they didn't belong in the movie. This studio was right, much like what I heard you guys talking about with Halloween 6. A lot of what was cut out should have been cut out, you know. I think it was a lot of unnecessary, like you said, almost homosexual. Well, actually, love triangle, central setup between Boone, Laurie, and Decker. It really did feel like that. The original movie, I like I said, I did like it. I've always loved the monsters. I do like the part where it is. That man is the monster, not the creatures. And I've always loved that. It just felt really uncomfortable. I didn't enjoy the cut at all. There's a few extra monsters that were kind of cool looking, but the rest of it, yeah, we could have left all that out. I was really expecting. The other thing, too, is I think I've heard all this hype about the Cabal cut.
Yeah.
And it made the circuits, and everybody's talking about, oh my God, you know, Narcissi comes, Decker comes out, and he's got his head on this big machete.
I bet that would have been exciting.
But they showed it for like 5 seconds, and I'm like, well, okay. And then they cut out the part where Decker became Ashbury's god. And that I hated. I didn't like that they cut that out. I understand Boone being Moses to the creatures of Midian. And I understood that part. But the rest of it just really became like this over... over politicized argument for gay, you know, the gay equality thing. It's how it kind of felt.
Do you think him taking Decker being like the crucified god do you think that Clive Barker took that out? Because, like, okay, when Richard Donner made Superman 2, he took things, like, he took good takes out just because they were in Richard Lester's version. You know what I mean? So do you think Clive Barker took that out? Because obviously he fucking shot it. Obviously there's a reason for it, right?
He shot it because they wanted to shift the focus to Decker.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's one of the extra scenes.
A more Hollywood-y kind of...
And again, I think setting up a sequel because Decker will come back and hunt down the Nightbreed because now he is the god, him and Ashbury.
I was just wondering if maybe this cut, like, even though... that maybe would have made it into the Cabal cut. Like, is this cut? Was Clive Barker saying, I want to make this a different movie than the theatrical, so I'm going to take this out even though...
Well, that's what I'm saying. He incorporated stuff that he reshot. The Decker murders weren't in the original cut, and he put them back in.
He still
in this one, because he still liked
them. Still like it.
Yeah. He just left out some of the other...
But even when Decker kills the family, that cuts in... not quite where it did in the original cut. Because she's talking about, do you want something to eat? Well, just go get me something. She's kind of in his lap. Oh, we're going to have some French fries. Why? Because we're fat people. And why? It's okay to kill fat, disgusting people.
I did like that about
you know, that. And that is how Decker felt. This filth, breeding filth. You know, he's trying to cleanse the world and create this utopia in his mind, the eugenics. And
look it up, kids.
And he just he goes to Midian because that is the cradle of filth to him. That is where it all lives, you know.
Not to mention the band.
Cradle of Filth has an album called Midian. You have to check it out.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, see, it all ties together. Yeah. But, again, you know, I love the movie. I always tell people my two favorite movies from that era. In fact, I tried to get to the last Horror Hound convention because there was the Night of the Demons reunion and the Nightbreed reunion. After watching this, I have a whole different outlook.
Was Craig Schaefer at the Nightbreed reunion?
Yes, he was.
Holy
he was.
Fuck.
Yes. Now, we keep talking about Boone's thing. Now, we talk about the Tribes of the Moon. His intricate artwork on his face, that's all tribal. But then when he changes to Cabal at the end, when Baphomet basically blesses him, it all changes to the thing on his forehead.
Yeah, because Baphomet, like, and that's what I was actually thinking when Travis was saying the thing about it, like, he changes back and forth. Baphomet, like, cleanses him of his facial scarring.
Right. And that's the thing. It's because he's the new Messiah. And you can't come back from your crucifixion with your wounds. So, and that's what Boone's been through. So to me, you know, like I said, I love Nightbreed. I cannot recommend this cut. It throws in things that don't need to be there. We all know hillbillies are dumb. I've got them in my family. They are dumb. Trust me. You know? I think they went to an extreme to try and point that out. Now, Charles Haig, the guy that played Iggerman, he was in
Hill Street Blues.
And he almost played almost the same character in Hill Street Blues, you know. But he's just that over the top, you know, we'll kill everybody. I'll kill you all. And he's not killing anybody. The priest takes him out in the end in this cut. So, and you never, that's the other thing, you never see him again after he does the whole missile scene that actually looks like a bottle rocket flying at him.
Yeah,
the whole Stinger missile. You don't see him anymore after that. I do love the creature design in this movie. I a lot of them were really cool. Like you said, Pelequin, they did way too much makeup to do that little work with Pelequin, other than he was to bite Boone and start the prophecy in motion. The Moonhead character, I always liked
there's
better.
There's a sex scene between Pelequin and Shirasazi that was cut out.
What?
Whoa. Yeah, it's on like
the... Okay, now that would have been interesting. Because how does that work? You know, dreads and quills. How can that go? You know.
He's got snakes. It's in the opening credits part of it. Yeah. She's dancing on top of him and he's got snakes.
Weird.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and that was the other thing is she always comes across as a sexual creature.
Yeah.
But again, how is she sexual? She does the tongue thing, oral fixation, and then she penetrates you with her quills. Yep. So again, it all comes back to, you know, uncomfortable is where I'm at with that. But she was, to me, always one of the visually coolest characters. Her, and I really don't know the character's name. I tried to look it up. The goat head guy, the black face with the goat horns. Mm-hmm. He was really cool to me. And the character, I'm assuming it's Onaka. He was the gentleman with the two tentacle arms that came out of his belly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really buy those arms. They built him up, and then all they did was...
eat eyeballs.
Cut you? Yeah. Or did they eat the eyeballs?
He grabs the guy's eyeballs.
But there's already eyeballs in the eyeballs.
And it's not like he's holding that hillbilly shotgun up. I'm sorry, but if I'm the hillbilly, the minute I see tentacles coming out of your belly, I'm pulling the trigger.
Yeah,
your head is coming off.
But that was a movie moment. It existed in a... Even though it lasted like a few seconds to us, that was supposed to be like an instant.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like I said, basically, in my wrap-up is I love Nightbreed. I do not like this cut of the movie, so I can't recommend this movie.
Oh.
All right, well, I picked it, so obviously I'm going to recommend it. I mean, my experience with Nightbreed that I saw it, you know, in its original theatrical form in 1990 and was like, you know, I don't know, of the three Clive Barker movies that have existed, it was my least favorite. You know, it always kind of felt like, I don't know, there's something about this. It's just not, you know, all there, or it's just not, there's something, you know, that didn't appeal 100%. I was intrigued by the idea, you know. I mean, I like the concept and I like, you know, the design and work and stuff like that. So watching this version now, right, that they've updated, I sit there and I go like, okay, is this a better version of Nightbreed? Again, like, you know, Gary has watched the original cut a couple weeks ago. I haven't seen it
numerous times.
You know, at least probably the late 90s is probably the last time I saw this. So it's very vague in my mind if at all, right? So just watching this cut, I do appreciate that they, you know, build the story with Boone and Laurie and Decker. That seems to be like the primary, the triangle, you know, that's the core of the movie. I think that is amplified in this version in a way that it wasn't before. Do I think we needed the full Johnny Get Angry song? Maybe not. I don't know. I think maybe we could
have cut that. Yeah, down. It was the full. It's like, oh shit, this is yeah, not just a segment.
The whole thing.
You know, oh, second verse. Yeah. What the fuck?
Did we need the scene in the mechanic's garage? Probably not, because at that point we had already established everything that was there. So it's like, okay, maybe it's a little more indulgent, right? They were so happy to have this footage again. They were just gonna put like back stuff that, you know. So I think for the first, what is it, maybe half hour of the movie, it does run a little long, so you have to be patient with it. I mean, obviously, this is the version that you've got now, so, you know. But the additions to the end of the movie, and the additions to, like, Cheryl, the girl that Laurie meets, because that was, like, really abrupt in the other version. There's more to it there. Everything's more fleshed out. So it does kind of, you know, we're sitting around here able to talk about it in a way where, like, the thing actually does kind of make sense. I mean, there's nowhere we're going, like, who the fuck was this guy and why did he just show up in the middle of the thing or whatever? You know, it's like everything does kind of flow and there you can see what the intention was of the whole thing. And I don't know, like, when I first watched this cut, it was by the end of it, I was, like, really having a good time by the time it got to, you know, the third act throwdown in Midian, because it's just like, it was just the craziest fucking thing. I'm just sitting there going, like, wow, I can't believe that, like, they actually shot this movie. Like, this is the craziest fucking thing, you know, for 1990.
No,
we're
CGI.
Just throwing all this crap at, like, yeah, it is a work of imagination. I guess, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before. It's like, this is one of those things where, you know, it really does feel like Clive Barker is an imaginative creator of, you know, he creates these worlds that out of thin air, right? Or using, he uses a lot of like religious, theological symbols. He uses a little bit, you know, stuff from horror movies and B-horror movies and like mashes them together with like, you know, human sexuality and spills out this like thing that you're like, there's nobody else doing this. I mean, so it's a one of a kind thing, I think. And that makes it special in many ways.
Clive to me is almost like a Renaissance man because he's a writer, a director,
a painter.
Yeah, he's almost that Renaissance man.
Yeah. He's an artist. He's a guy who's like never held down like a legitimate, well, okay, take that back. He's never held down a working class job in his life. Right? He's always been a player. He's done plays, screenplays, directed films,
Didn't he sell Books of Blood when he's like 19
I mean, so that's what I'm saying. I don't think he ever actually had to work as like, you know, the guy in Walmart or whatever, you know? So he lives in his imagination and his imagination is boundless, right? I mean, we're getting slices of it in these movies that he's been able to make.
I love what Stephen King said, where he's like, I've seen the future of horror, and his name is Clive Barker. I mean, I truly believe that. I mean, I've read Damnation Game, I've read a bunch of his shit. It's like, Clive Barker is a crazy thinker.
He's gone, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of his later day output is less horror more fantasy, but it's like this weird...
But he's always been, because like, Weave World
but he made a name for himself.
The Thief of Always.
Yeah, well, that's a Harry Potter-ish kind of children's book.
Yeah, Thief of Always is a great children's book. That's pretty good.
But, I mean, he made a name for himself. He exploded onto the scene with the Books of Blood, so he was like the next horror
guy. Human Condition, you know? Cabal.
Yeah, but those were all, in England, those were released as the Books of Blood. We retitled them here when they came out. Yeah. So, you know, and then he, in films, created, like, Pinhead, you know, and actually, you know, I was thinking about that. I mean, like, Pinhead has, like, or Hellraiser has this kind of, S&M bondage thing kind of going on with this, like, but it is, like, the most hetero of his movies. Cause I was thinking, like, even, like, Lord of Illusions, after we were watching this, I'm sitting there going, like, the main drive between that is, like, there's Swan and Nyx. And Nyx is just like, I just wanted someone that we could be together in the dark. You know, like, that's his whole thing. Like, there's the second story of D'Amour and Swan's wife, right? that's like the main story of the movie. But then you also have like these two dudes who are like orbiting each other. They're like, what the hell? That's Lord of Illusions. Yeah. So can you also separate the filmmaker from, you know, his?
Well, I don't think you can, because I mean, an artist is his personality. Yeah. He brings it to it. I mean, but it's not to say we're knocking. I mean, just because we're looking into it. But not that there's anything wrong with that.
But I think, you know, again, the fact that I was able to see this movie in 1990 and was oblivious to all this stuff and enjoyed it to the extent that I did, you know, means that you can watch it without, you know, obviously seeing it with, you know, the subtext. I think that's basically coming to the end of my wrap up. I would recommend this movie as a work of a horror fantasy. It's worth checking out. You know, do you see it in the theatrical cut or the director's cut? I'm gonna go with the director's cut because there's more to it and it makes more sense. It's been changed, you know, but I think it makes more sense. I think you could have lost some at the beginning, but you know, that's just me. I still don't think that this is a perfect movie. I'm not in love with it, you know? It's not like, this is the fucking most awesome, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's still, you know, it's like, but it's a pretty good story, and I would recommend the movie. So that's Nightbreed on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week is Travis's pick. Well, whatever you're watching next week.
It's going to be Boxing in Space with Arena, a Charles Band production.
Dun, dun.
So don't there's lots of movies called Arena, but this one is about boxing in space. In it? No.
Oh, okay. It's not
it has a white guy in it.
Can box?
Yeah.
Well, in space?
I told you it's gotta be from the 80s. I told you it was sci-fi. So yeah, Arena is what it's called. Arena.
So that's next week.
I think from 89, I can't recall.
Ooh. So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is closed.
Oh.